On this episode of Scammer Stories, a woman who works for a major bank in the US and the UK. This is a big piece of the puzzle that's been missing from these episodes. It's difficult to get people in the industry to talk. This woman, who we'll call Michelle, was kind enough to speak with me after listening to Scammer Stories and witnessing the heartbreaking stories from scam victims from her perspective every day. Did you hear that? Every day, Michelle gets called to the phone to speak with someone who's being scammed. It's not only family members who feel the frustration. It's actually the bankers, too. She works for a major worldwide bank that we're not going to reveal.
So I work for a well-known bank, and I guess you could say I'm a problem solver. I work in escalations. So I deal with customers that are high-end, business, personal, deal with complaints, you know, troubleshooting, you name it, I do it. I've been with this company for quite some time, for many years, actually. And so the role that I'm in is a bilingual role, and it is a role where, you know, if you ask for a supervisor or there's a huge issue with your account, I'm the lucky chosen one.
Yuck.
I'm the lucky chosen one. So I get to kind of see and hear everything that's going on when something goes wrong. I see a lot of this because a lot of times they do request a supervisor because they're desperate, upset, confused. So the agents will be like, oh, I've got a supervisor call, and they'll transfer over to me. And then it's my job to kind of determine what's going on and who they should speak to and what they can do.
If you've ever tried to have a conversation with a scam victim to get them to stop, you know that it's not usually going to go well. Michelle knows before she even gets on that phone call if the person is being scammed.
When we're talking about the elderly or even just older, you know, adults that are caught up in a potential scheme.
One of the first questions Michelle asks the account holder on the other end of the line is, do you know this person? A lot of the time, they'll waver back from yes to no.
They get very defensive. It's a very difficult. I recognize the signs immediately because when I look at the account, I can see if this is somebody that they have Zelle before or someone that they have wired before or someone that they have had on their account. You kind of have to use common sense in my role, to be honest with you. You have to look and say, okay, is this one of the beneficiaries? Is this one of the, you know, older children that are on the account? And when I see that the customer is dealing with someone that is not on their account or someone that they recognize on their account as a POA or what have you, then that's a red flag for me. Immediately, the first thing I ask is, do you know this person that you're trying to send money to? When I look at the account, I look at everything. I look at who the beneficiaries are, if there's any power of attorney or if there's somebody else on the account. And if the person that they're trying to sell money to, you know, wire money or what have you, or even a check, I look at those things and I say, well, hang on. So, you know, I'm not asking this to embarrass you. I just need to know, in order for me to help you, I need you to please confirm with me who it is that you've been, you know, sending money to. And have you met them in person? That's what I mean. And I have to kind of really stress that out, which is strange because you would think nowadays most people would say, well, no, I don't know them, you know, but they won't admit it. It kind of takes a little bit of dragging for me to be able to say, okay, come on, I just need to, sometimes I have to take off my hat a little bit and say, listen, I know it's embarrassing, but I need you to tell me what's going on in order for me to help. Sometimes it works, but then they get angry and it becomes the most awkward conversation because here I am trying to help them and let them know, listen, this person is not real. I know they seem real to you, but they are not. It's heartbreaking because they turn immediately against me. Because you have to remember that there are certain guidelines that I have to follow. Unfortunately, when you give someone your account information or your credit card number or your debit card number, you're actively participating in that scam. You really are.
Yes.
And so therefore, it's hard to say, okay, it's a fraud. Well, they scammed me. You know that it's a fraud. I understand that. But you gave them the information. So we have to dig a little further to kind of find some sort of loophole. What age bracket are they in? Do they sound like they've been taken advantage of so that, you know, maybe they fall under the elder abuse category? There's different guidelines that we have to follow. But the interesting piece to this for me, my mother was 96. She passed away in 2021. So I personally understand the angst of a lot of adult children, what they go through. And, you know, thankfully, I didn't have that much of an issue with my mother. But what I had to do, not in her later years, because eventually it was easy for me to just take over once she was in a home and stuff. But
Michelle says you have to decide, do you want to be sneaky like your parents were when you were a teenager or not?
Prior to that, when she was still independent, I had to basically trick her. Unfortunately, I had to say, hey, let me see your debit card. And then because I know she doesn't go online, she didn't go online at the time, I would go online and I would register her account and I would just have access to it. She wouldn't know that. That's one of the recommendations that I give to my friends with elderly parents. I say, listen, just get their information, but she won't give it to me. Just get it. Just get it, because really it's a matter of life and death in some situation, because some of these folks have given away their hard-earned money and they're going to end up destitute. So this is a desperate situation. You know, our parents did it to us, right? When we were kids, they would have to trick us, right? You remember those days when they would pretend that they didn't know, but they knew, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like what we have to do. We have to turn the tables around. And I advise my friends all the time, listen, just trick your parents. Get that account number. Get those CD numbers. Get the information. If you can get on the account willingly, great. Get on the account. Let them know, look, I don't want your money, Mom. I just want to be able to just make sure everything's okay. But that becomes an ego fight, I believe, with a lot of people, with their parents, because it becomes that way for us. And here I am with the bank telling you straight out, it is a fraud. This person doesn't exist. You have not communicated face to face. And then also, too, there's another piece to that. I think you covered it, but I'll say it again just for measure. Yes, there are recordings that people do. I don't know how they do it, because people like us, law-abiding citizens, we don't know these things until we hear about them and we learn about them, right? So what they do is they'll videotape a real person, right? Or that person that they're taking their identity, stealing their identity from, might have a video. You could have a very innocent video of yourself, because remember, when you FaceTime somebody, they can record that. And what I mean by they, I mean, if you're FaceTiming someone and it just so happens to be a funny little conversation you had, for example, with your grandchild, and you put it on Facebook, somebody can take that and it'll look like you're really responding. And then they'll give a reason as to why maybe it's not directly at them, but somehow to that person, it's like, okay, they're real because I see this little video here and they're really FaceTiming me. Well, no, they're not.
Several years ago, before my mother's scam, I would have told you this is crazy, but she's right. It took me a while to figure out what happened. Mom said she knew Gerald was real because they FaceTimed. What really happened is the scammer found a video of the real man speaking on video. When the lips didn't match the conversation, the scammer said it was just the connection. You know what's scary is artificial intelligence is about to take romance scams by storm. It's up to people like you and me, the adult children, to step in and take a stand. And that's going to be tough. It's going to ruin many relationships with parents as we fight to keep their financial stability. Like me, you're going to have to choose. Do I want to try and have some sort of a normal relationship with my parents while they're out of their mind in love with a fake person, or protect their finances so they can continue with money for rent, food, and medical expenses? I mean, Michelle says it's already bad with current technology.
So it gets very intense sometimes because they're so convinced by all of these tools. And sadly, these tools are getting more and more sophisticated, if you haven't noticed, but they get so upset. You don't know how many times I've gotten off the phone and I'm heartbroken because they're yelling at me, they're screaming, and they're like, you're a liar, you don't know what you're talking about. This is somebody that I know. And in my mind, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, you know, I wish there was somebody that I could call to say, hey, you got a problem on your hands, you know, but I can't.
Yeah, you're not allowed to call the family, are you?
No, I'm not. I'm not allowed. I know how frustrating the family members can feel sometimes, and they might think, well, why doesn't the bank do anything? It's not that.
Michelle says there are certain categories that need to be met.
I can submit a report, by the way, but they have to meet certain criteria. If they sound lucid to me and they're not over 60 and they're just in a bad, they just made bad choices. Because remember, it's not illegal, you know, to put yourself in this position. You know, it's not a crime for you to want to give your money away, if you will. It only becomes a situation when we're dealing with certain categories where we can see that the account does have a power of attorney, where we can see that there's been notations on the account. If there's certain things that have been flagged and there's somebody else, for example, a custodian or somebody that's in the account or a guardianship, then it becomes different. Then it becomes, okay, I can fill out this form. We can't always fill it out because, for example, you yourself, you're about my age, I'm 53. So at the end of the day, I'm allowed to make dumb decisions, right? I can do that. So who are they going to call if I was the one being taken? But you do have a lot of customers that just, they turn the tables on you and they get very upset and then they hang up on you. And then before you know it, you're thinking, wow, man, they're already 30,000, 40,000 in the hole and they're not even believing the bankers. You know, and I think I heard one of your episodes where one of the gentlemen was saying that he went to the banker and the banker was like, look, I mean, we told them, we told your mom, we told your dad, they won't believe us. That's an issue. But the way around that, I think ultimately what it boils down to is you have to have conversations. Have conversations. You know, mom, you're getting older. I know that stinks. But, you know, as your adult child, I don't want you to feel alone and I don't want you, you know, and that's a hard conversation to have because a lot of times parents do get defensive. What other way can you do it without offending them, you know?
So you recommend doing a power of attorney or a guardianship?
The guardianship, that gets a little more expensive and it gets a little more tricky. The reason being is because you have to go through the court system and you have to prove that they're basically not of sound mind. So that takes a lot more work. Again, I heard one of your episodes and I think somebody had to go that route. And that becomes very expensive because as an institution, we have to also remember that there's privacy acts, right? We have to make sure that we're protecting the privacy of our customers. So I suggest making sure that they do have power of attorney and or have their names on the account. That way they can create a login to get in. They can make decisions on behalf of that parent. But like I said, it just becomes a very tricky situation because a lot of parents or, you know, elder, they refuse that. I want to say it's a pandemic if you want to know the truth. It's really out of control. Because I deal with this almost on a daily basis.
Wow.
On a daily basis. And when they start getting angry, I already know. And when they start going on, then I say, okay, she knows what's going on. Then he knows what's going on, but they don't want to see it.
She has an interesting point. She also points out the difference from the dangers from our childhood to today. What would our parents have done if we would have had the same threats?
So personally, if that were my parent, I would strongly recommend that people really start having these conversations. I want to say, let's start with having conversations. I think it's important, you know, when you're moving out of your home, graduating from college, you say, okay, mom, dad, you know, listen, you know, have a talk with them. I think it sounds funny, but it almost sounds like just kind of like what our parents did to us when we turned 18. They said, okay, you know, here are the rules. You're an adult now, and these are the things that we expect from you. Same thing. I think when our parents are getting older, I think it's time for us to accept that we live in an age where you have to have that conversation with your parents. Have just an open, honest conversation. Have them listen to a show like yours and say, look, these are what a lot of other grown adult children are going through. You could even maybe even turn it around and say, please don't do this to me. Don't make me suffer and worry that you're doing something or sending money to people that you don't know. Call it out. You know, dad passed away 3 years ago. You're lonely. Let's be honest about that. Because I think if we have more honest conversations and be more proactive, that would help.
How often are you able to talk someone out of it? Ever?
I have had conversations where it sounded like they were believing me, but deep in my heart, I just knew just from life experience that they were just telling me what I wanted to hear. Not as often as I'd like, I'll be honest. I think that it's the opposite. They get more upset and angry than they do cooperative. But I have had a few where it just, you know, it'll sink in and then they'll get quiet. And then I'll say, I'm very, very sorry. I'm sorry that this is happening to you. And I know it's hard to believe, but I've been doing this for many years. And then I'm very well aware of all of the things that are going on in the world as far as scams and stuff, just because of the role that I'm in. And because I'm inside, you know, I work with a bank and I know it's embarrassing. You know, I try to hit on all the real points, right? Embarrassing. What are my kids going to think? They're going to think I'm an idiot. What a fool. And I'll say, you know, you're not a fool. You're not an idiot. You know, it happens. We're human.
Now let's talk about this for a second. If you're being scammed and have adult children, take it from me, they might be disappointed or mad at you for a moment if you come clean. But if you don't, they'll be scarred for the rest of their life. Trust me, I'm speaking from experience here. The day my mom sent me a text and admitted to her scamming situation, I wasn't mad. I was worried. The nightmare would have ended there, though, if she just would have stopped. I might be talking to you today with her still alive. So don't worry about your children being angry. Tell them you were a victim, you learned, and you're moving on. If you can't forgive and forget, there are other issues at play here.
I myself have told them, please call your daughter, call your son, call them, tell them what's going on, and say, look, mom made a bad decision. And they'll say, oh boy, you know, my son's going to be upset or my daughter's going to be angry. That's why I say, you know, be proactive. You know, you're leaving home. First thing you should do as a young adult is say, mom, dad, can we please go out to dinner? Let's have a conversation. I'm going off. You know, I graduated. I'm going to be doing this. I'm not going to be able to be as involved as I'd like to be, but I don't want to worry about you. This is what's going on in the world. And the same way you prepared me for adulthood, I need to prepare you for your older years or your golden years. I need to prepare you as well. It's my job to do that. I think if we have soft conversations with them, letting them know times have changed, it's now my turn to watch over you, please let me do that, I think for the most part, many will avoid a lot of these things. I think it's when it kind of becomes the shock. What happens is, you know, what do? We react. Oh my gosh, I can't believe you were so dumb, mom. What did you do? Don't avoid that. Just avoid that, because believe me, they already feel that way. They're already going to feel that way. So don't give them that after the fact. Try to be proactive in saying, listen, I saw this show. Maybe this isn't you, but it could be you in a couple of years. And please don't let it be you. Not for me. Please, for me. If you can't do it for yourself, at least do it for me, because I don't want to worry. I didn't have to worry about that with my mom, because my mother wasn't, you know, she was born in 1925. She was just not savvy on online at all. So I didn't have to worry about that. Now, I did have to worry about phone calls. The phone calls back a few years back, I don't know if you remember, but there were a lot of scam calls. Mm-hmm. Now that's transitioned to online. So, but with my mom, prior to this being an issue, even before it was something that was, you know, so out of control, I kind of went that direction with my mother. I said, mom, if somebody calls you, they ask you for money, don't do it. Let me know. And then I would say to her, I'm not doing this to control you. I just want to make sure you understand that there's nobody that needs to have your information ever over the phone. And she'll say, I know. And I'll say, okay. You know, and I used to watch her that way. But luckily, I didn't have to worry about the internet situation. So they've evolved, and now they're evolving. And this is just me speaking in my own opinion, just because of how I've seen it evolve. I believe this AI thing is going to make it even worse, if you want to know the truth, because even for us, we get those calls when someone's trying to infiltrate an account, and I get the red flags because we get caller ID. I don't know if you're aware of this. We're pretty ahead of the times. When you call, your account is populated with your phone number. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes the system, you know, because it is a machine, obviously. Sometimes it doesn't always, but sometimes it does. And it'll say your name, phone number, and then an account will pop up. I'll have to ask you some questions to confirm your identity. And then we can go forward based on what kind of security you have on the account. But with that being said, with the strange thing that I can tell you that has started happening is that we're hearing bots calling in as that person. And that's a very scary, that's a whole different conversation as far as from this topic. That's the evolution of what, you know, these scams are turning to. So we have to be careful who we're speaking with nowadays. Be proactive. I think at this point, based on the conversations that many of your guests have had with their parents and the things that they've experienced, they really got caught off guard. And I think that's the common denominator. A lot of them got caught off guard. And doing that creates this giant animosity probably within the family, because now you're going, what are you doing? You know, and it becomes, they get defensive. But they do get very defensive with us. It's heartbreaking because my hands are tied. I mean, I can only do so much. If I can submit a report based on what I'm hearing on the call, I do. But if they're lucid and they're adamant, I mean, the few people that have admitted it will tell me, yeah, I understand, but I could hear it in their voice that they're doubting me. You know what I mean? Or they don't want to believe me.
So what does that report do? When you say you can write up a report, what does
that
mean?
Sure. Well, it's an elder abuse report, but they have to meet a certain criteria. They have to, their account has to look a certain way. In other words, it has to look like there's different activity.
And so who does that report go to?
It's an internal, it's like a global security thing. And they do send somebody. I don't know. I'll be honest, beyond that, I don't know exactly the full steps, but I do know that it goes to a particular department that determines if they have to reach out to social services, I believe, or send the information to someone that needs to be aware of it, that can look into it. And maybe, I don't know if they visit with the customer, if they call the customer, there's probably different steps that they take, because not every situation is going to be the same, right? Because you have different things that happen to many people. You have people who really are being, you know, financially abused by family members. That's a whole different report. And then you've got this report here where you kind of have to say, okay, because for example, if someone calls in and they sound and they're of sound mind and this is what they want to do, well, what report can I submit? You know what I mean? There's nothing I can do at that point. They go into the bank and they say, hey, I'm trying to get this money over there. Why can't I send it? There are certain things that can happen. What can happen is, for example, if someone's account, we have what's called like a profile, right? The way that the security works, as far as alarming, you know, sending off the alarms or sounding off the alarms, I should say, is that if you're a person that's always like every week you go to 7-Eleven, fill up your gas, you go to Walmart, grab your little things, maybe you go to a grocery store and you have a little donation that you do to St. Jude's every month, you know, your account becomes kind of like a pattern, right? And as soon as that pattern breaks, where now all of a sudden you're sending $20,000 out, there are sounding alarms that do go with that. But what happens? That particular customer will call back and say, no, I want that to go through. If my mom, if she was still with me and online and doing these things, I would personally make sure that my phone number is attached to it so that if they call me, I can say, no, don't do anything yet. Let me reach out, you know, and then I can kind of get ahead of the game a little bit, you know. What I would do.
Okay. You can at least reach out to the family that way.
The fraud team, when they get that sound off, that person will get either the text, because you can also get alerts. That's another thing. You can get an alert, a security alert, or you can just get a general alert. Remember, use those tools. There's a lot of tools, by the way, that you can use. You can have that set up, yes. And sometimes you can do it if you're savvy and you're trying to get in there. You can set it up that way. But when the alarms, getting back to that point, when the alarms are sounded, then what happens is that, you know, security will call and say, but if it gets to that parent, guess what? They're going to confirm that it is them trying to do it.
Yeah.
You see, so those are little things that maybe can be helpful for people to know. Say, hey, put your number on there. Tell your mom, say, listen, I know you don't text much. Or if you are, let me get some. There's a compromise that you can make somewhere in there with that parent. You know, let me get some alerts on my phone, mom. Let me make sure, you know. And again, that's going to be based on, you know, that relationship and how much you can convince them to at least help, you know, be part of protecting you. Basically, remember, the banks are a business. Okay, this is something that's important to understand. And I say this not to be facetious in any way, in any kind of way, but the reality is that the bank is a bank. It's a business, you know, just like 7-Eleven. It's a business. If somebody at the 7-Eleven sees that you're hungry, well, what are they going to do? They might throw you a little sandwich or something, but they can't help you, right? They can only do so much if you're in need and they see that. Well, yes, at a bank, we have a responsibility to making sure that we protect you. But you have to remember, we're talking about something where people are rejecting that help. You know, it's not like you're saying, please help me, because if you say that, then we're going to say, okay, yes, let's help you. Let's change the account number. Stop talking to this person. And I'll tell them, listen, they're going to come back and say, hey, I couldn't, you know, what happened? Don't go back and say, why did you lie to me? Don't even bother, because really, that's just, it's not going to matter, right? Because you're talking to somebody that's literally trying to scam you. So don't go back to that. But at the end of the day, you know, it's going to be up to the person to really listen and to understand what's happening. We can be stronger if we have more family members involved. I just think and this is an opinion from my, you know, for me, that I personally feel we're not living in those, in the times anymore where we can just kind of say, oh, you know, my mom's, she knows better. You know, we have to stop thinking that way. I want us not to scare people, but I want to say, look, this is a serious problem. I see it every day. You'd think it stopped with all of the Dr. Phil shows that they've done on it, with your show, with blogs like yours. We no longer live in an age where we can just leave it up to, you know, even with our kids. I think when they start getting high school accounts, same thing with them, you know, watch what they're doing, watch who they're talking to, you know, because now I haven't seen as much with that with the younger generation, but I don't see that too far either.
Are you guys getting training on this and things? Is this something that the banks are tackling? Or
Yes. There are things that the bank is doing. I mean, we do have discussions. We do have meetings. We do have huge training on what to recognize when it comes to elder abuse. Remember, elder abuse, reporting elder abuse is absolutely our responsibility. We do absolutely report that. But there's a fine line, right? Fine line with that elder abuse. Elder abuse is where you have somebody that you know that is incapacitated and has somebody else on their account all of a sudden that's making large withdrawals and doing things that are completely opposite from this person's. When you have an elder, when you have a case like that, you won't see, you know, casino, liquor store, you know, Vegas, large sums of cash being withdrawn. You won't see that. When you see it, that those are little red flags that we say, okay, something's happening here. This lady for a long time had, you know, $8,000 in her savings. It's been depleted in less than 3 months. Then that's where we would submit a report for elder abuse, potential elder abuse, for them to investigate. That's much different than scamming. The problem with the scams is that these people are calling in and saying, put this money through. I'm authorizing it. It is me. They'll even go to the branch and do that. And they'll even say okay to all of the warning signs. So to answer your question, yes. But that can only work when people, you know, heed to it, right? If you're not listening, if you're not abiding by it, then how much more can they help? If they're saying, hey, they'll even send out, you know, notifications once in a while, you know, please beware, you know, don't send money to people you don't know. Don't wire money to people you don't know. Don't do international wires without verifying and you know, understanding who you're wiring this to.
So what has to happen for the bank to close the account? Because that happened to my mom.
So, and by the way, I also do try the scare tactic a little bit. Like if I get somebody that's on the fence, I let them know. I say, and by the way, I'm not saying that this is something that I'm not suggesting that this is what's happening to you right now, but please be aware, if you continue with this and you're not certain of who's getting this money, you can literally, you know, your accounts can start being closed. They will start closing the account when the persons or the customers are not, when they continue to do what they're doing, when they're getting flagged and they continue to override it. And then the bank does, I'm going to assume this because believe it or not, there's a lot of internal things that they don't share. And I would imagine that I'm okay with that because I would imagine that there's a lot of things they won't share with us because think about it. These are things that you want to keep as confidential as possible so that no one understands the actual process. Does that make sense? Like kind of like when a detective is doing work on a case, he's not going to share with you all of the details because they need to catch this guy, right? Mm-hmm. Same thing with the banks. There's so much, even for us internally, that they won't share because there are probably things that they do that they have to do to protect the bank and protect the customer. Because remember, there's two types of protection going on here as well. Now, when they start seeing that you're not heeding, right? You're not backing off. You're still doing what you're doing. And what they do is they start realizing that because they can see where the accounts are going to. And then when they probe further and they can see that this account, because what happens is these scammers, they set up these accounts for temporary use and then they close them. And when the bank starts seeing that there's a lot of different people sending money to this one account, they will eventually start closing all the people that contributed as well as that account if it's not already closed by that time.
My mom, her bank closed her account, but then she was able to go to another bank and open another account. So there's no communication system between banks.
Oh, there is. But you have to remember, again, for example, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, all of the banks communicate. The problem here is that one bank might have a certain criteria, another bank might have. That doesn't mean they're not communicating, but obviously Bank of America can't tell Wells Fargo, well, don't open this account for this person. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We can't tell them that. We can say, hey, we closed this account for this, and it's going to be up to Wells Fargo's process because Wells Fargo's process is whatever Wells Fargo's process is, right? They might, who knows? They might go back and they may say, oh, wait a minute, we're getting some internal reports. Because what I understand, and this is just from my years of experience again and just kind of hearing how it may work behind the scenes, they all communicate, especially if there's something nefarious going on. They do. But they're going to always give you, you know, because at the end of the day, this person is not a criminal, right? We're talking about a citizen that's just being participating in something that's a little bit, you know, that's obviously nefarious. At some point, and that's, we're kind of getting into legal stuff, so I can't say too much about that. But what I can tell you is that, yes, they can, you can literally, you can get in trouble eventually, because eventually what it's going to show is intent. And I imagine that's probably why it takes that. You know what I mean? Like, for example, you get yourself involved in a scam. You get a warning from your bank saying, hey, you're doing this, you're doing this, you're doing this. And then they don't listen. And then all of a sudden they're saying, you know what, we're going to have to close. We're going to have to end the relationship with these people. They end the relationship. And then if it moves on, if they go to an, like with what your mom did, I believe, and this is, again, just me making an outsider opinion, just based on what I've seen, they were going from bank. The bank would close it. They would go to another bank. The bank would close that account. And the bank, you know, and I think you have to show, because it's one thing to make a mistake and say, oh my gosh, I didn't know what I was doing, versus continuously going back to back to back, opening accounts in different places. Then it becomes, you're actively participating. That's where the active participation, and that's scary, because you absolutely can be interrogated and brought in for something like that.
How does the money muling work? So the scammers will use someone to run the money through the account, but what's the reason for that? The scammer would send my mom money to put in her account to send to another place.
Because what they're doing, yeah, it's like a muling. What they're doing is they're basically saying, because somebody might say, Bob, whatever the scammer's name is, Bob, you know, what's going on here? You know, I'm short on my rent now because I helped you. I just need $300. Can you just, you know, help me out? And they might, in good faith, just to keep that person on the hook, will say, sure. They'll get the money from somebody else. And ultimately, somebody else is sending them that money. So now it's not Bob sending it. It's somebody like your mom sending it unsuspectingly. What it does is it cuts the trace. It's not a direct contact, kind of like a pyramid scheme, I guess. You know, I give you, you give to the next person, the next person gives to the next person, and then before you know it, they've got all these tracing that it makes it that much harder to catch the actual perpetrators. And by the way, those accounts are shut down pretty quickly. They don't usually last too long. They just last long enough to where they're getting money, sending it out. How they're opening it, I don't know, because there are so many. It would be interesting to see how easy they're doing this. I don't know how they're doing this. You know, I really, it's incredible how they can get away with this and open up another account. But I believe, obviously, it has to do with identity theft, because the person's never going to be the real person behind that account. But I think the key word here is being proactive. I think a lot of what's happened is after the fact. And I think we just need, I think it would be interesting to see people be more proactive. I think proactivity is a very important piece to that. I don't remember which episode, but I heard someone very upset with the bank. They were like, I'm so upset because the bank didn't even do anything. No, it's just that our hands are tied. Remember, we live in a democracy. We can't, you know, they're a business. You're your own person. If you want to, you know, but at the end of the day, it is a crime, right? You can do what you want, but at the end of the day, you could be walking into something that's much bigger than you ever realized. You know, and so that needs to be taken into consideration as well.
Yeah.
You know, because it can be, but there are so many little things like the tools that I mentioned, the alerts. Those alerts, you can go in and set it up and just be notified. Maybe you just want to be notified about what's you know, what's going on as far as the amount that's being transferred.
If I wanted to get an alert set up on my mom's account, would I have to have her permission?
When you say permission, from who? From the bank to do that? Depends on how, you know, I'm Hispanic, so I have I'm not asking, and I didn't mean that as a stereotype. Yeah. I'm just saying that.
But can I go to the bank and say, hey, can you send me alert?
Oh no, not in that way. No,
yeah.
The only way to do that is either with or with you. Just, you know, and I hate to suggest this because it sounds like I'm kind of saying, okay, now you're going to go trick your mother. I'm not trying to advocate for that, but at the end of the day, if it's to me, I really honestly, I have kids and I'm gonna look and see what they're doing at all times, and I'm not gonna feel guilty about that. I give them their privacy, but I'm not gonna feel guilty about that. So I think it kind of falls along that's kind of like what I'm suggesting. You if you can get it, great. If you can't, then you're gonna need to say, mom, I need to get some information from your account. Mm-hmm. And then you just set it up. I mean, It sounds, you know, sneaky, but I'd rather do that and apologize later and say, I'm sorry, but I really had to, you know, watch over you. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's, you know, what are we really saying here? Get her permission. Because obviously you're only trying to protect her, right? Or him. If it's your father or grandfather or grandmother, you know. But no, the bank cannot speak with you. That's another thing. If you called and you said, hey, I'm her daughter, this is going on. I mean, we can't even get into the account and document that. I mean, we just can't. We have to get her on the line or him on the line. And that would be the one way that you could get permission as well, where you could say, hey, mom, we've got to call the bank together. But like so many of your callers, right? A lot of their parents were fighting back, right? They were finding other ways, you know, applying for loans and stuff like that. So it was kind of going, you know, sideways.
Michelle says, although romance scams online have just started to gain steam over the last few years, it's been around for a while. Remember the Nigerian prince emails? I still get those. One thing that listening to Michelle is showing us, there are humans tied to emotions on the other side of the phone in these phone calls. Put yourself in her shoes for a moment. Wouldn't you want to scream at the victim to stop? So I hope you've learned a lot from this episode. I know I did. We still have a long way to go, though, to get the attention of the banking industry to make them notice, but they are aware. If you have a story you'd like to share, email me at scammerstoriespodcast@gmail.com. If you'd like to help keep this podcast going, I'll post a link for a one-time donation in the show notes. Until next time, Scammer Warriors.